Hello, everybody. Welcome to the latest episode of the Substation podcast. And this is part of our series where we're talking about electricity market design. And today, the dimension of electricity market design that we're going to talk about is time. So my name is Emma Burns.
And my name is Tom Edwards.
Let's talk about time, Tom. Let's go on a time quest. Time is really important to electricity market design. So it's firstly because it's a key feature of how we actually design the product. So we need to decide on what the length of the product that we are trading is, and that is a specific time, and that's often called a settlement period. But then also how that product is traded often relates to time. So we've talked about hedging a few times on this podcast, which is all about how far in advance you buy or sell a product and sort of lock in a price. And there's also sort of shapes that you can trade of a product, which often relate to time. So, you know, you can buy or sell a peak product, which would be related to the peak period of consumption.
Yeah. And you'll also know things at different times. So you'll know different things about the system at different times. So you'll only know a certain amount a year ahead. You'll get more and more knowledge as you get closer and closer to day ahead. Then you're into kind of operational time scales where you've starting to learn a lot more about the system. And then really you'll only have, if you're say a system operator, a reasonably good idea of what's happening 4 hours in advance. And then actually we'll only really know what happened afterwards when we look backwards at it. And even then we probably won't know what happened for about 18 months until afterwards. So there's a really intriguing kind of offset in information throughout time as well.
The flip side of that is investors who want more time. They want more certainty and longer term certainty of what the revenues will be. They don't necessarily want to wait till the day ahead stage to have a view of that. They want to lock that in on a longer term time frame. So let's start with the product first. So in other words, the settlement period, as it's usually called.
The period in which we're doing settlement. So settlement is the activity of determining who did what, in what order, when, and it's the period in which that is occurring.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, we need to define what the settlement period is to say, okay, this is the product that we're going to sell or buy. It's often a block of time in sort of 5 minute chunk is a, so it's a half hour period here in Britain, so 30 minutes. And that's effectively the product that we're buying and selling. So there's 48 settlement periods across the day.
And the reason that we have those is because at the kind of time when a lot of the systems were devised, half an hour is about how much data that the large meters could hold between the reads. So it wasn't possible to go any finer because in the time that it took for somebody to go around and read the data off the meter, it would have accrued too much data and it would have overwritten some. So half an hour was fine. It was about as fine as you could get.
As with everything in electricity, it all comes back to metering.
Yeah. So you get the... Theoretically, if the day was finer, if you had more control over the price, because if you look at, say, the actions the system operator takes in the balancing mechanism, you'll see that they're able to specify times between which generators should be doing stuff. So you could allocate prices down to kind of minutes in terms of granularity, because we know that, you know, an action taken by the system operator in real time told a generator to come on at 5 minutes past four and carry on until 11 minutes past four. So we could have a separate price for that period based on that marginal action and different marginal actions. But the market being designed around the prevalent metering, which is half an hour, has to average all that out over that period. And that's where the product is about, because that's where you get settled to, which is where all of everyone's accounts are sorted out. So we know who owes who did what, across that half an hour period. That's what we're kind of most concerned about when people are trading.
Yeah. And I suppose, as with everything, it's usually a balance between a lot of granularity and complexity on the one hand, and sort of the ability for the market to be able to get their head around it, for algorithms to optimize it. So we've kind of settled in on 30 minutes in Great Britain, partly also, I suppose, more recently driven by the smart meter rollout. So, you know, the meters that are going into people's houses, and they were all programmed up to be able to take 30-minute meter readings rather than anything more granular than that.
Yeah, I think you could technically increase the number of registers that the smart meters have, but you're going to make, you know, if you went down to 15 minutes, you're doubling the amount of data that has to go around the system. So you're going to incur costs to everybody across the system, because the metering chain is from, you know, from your house or business's closet somewhere, or house station or something like that. You've got to either communicate that to your meter aggregator, metering agents, who then pass it on to the suppliers, and they'll also be making sure that passes on to the central settlement agent and any sort of the system operator or distribution network operator if they're involved in any sort of ancillary services. So there's a huge range of participants who are interested in what's happening at that data. If you make the system more granular, you know, it's a doubling of the data, but then it's not just one party who's dealing with that data. Many, many parties are dealing with that data.
So, well, I guess we have 30 minutes, but there's a big push, well, at least at a European level and I suppose internationally, to consider moving to shorter settlement periods. So maybe having 5-minute blocks or 15-minute blocks. I'd say probably the gold standard is 5 minutes. I'm not aware of any markets that do it any less than that. Then it just becomes a bit too much of a difficult problem.
Australia's moving to 5 minutes, aren't they? Or have moved. Either are moving or have moved to 5 minutes. Another example is the Netherlands is on 15 minutes, and the goal across Europe is to move to a 15-minute standard settlement period for electricity markets. GB had always sought a derogation because Ofgem believed that the cost of switching over all the meters across GB, so bearing in mind, like, there are half-hourly meters out there that have been there since the 90s, probably at the least. There are offshore meters and things like that. You have to go out and get someone to go and change that piece of equipment, along with all the central settlement systems, along with every supplier system, along with every metering agent system, along with the system operator and the network owner's systems, all have to change. So every study they did came back saying it's too expensive.
Because I guess, yeah, the data is one thing, but then the actual physical cost of changing the meters, putting the men or women in the vans or the boats or whatever it is to go and actually take that off the wall.
And of course, there's a shortage of metering equipment in the world right now.
Oh, yes. What's driving that?
Supply chain disruptions. The markets that make metering equipment.
And because there's not many providers as well, right? It's fairly limited.
Yeah. I mean, if a boat doesn't reach here from China and it was full of meters, then we're out of meters because we just don't keep that many here, and we use them all. They need replacing constantly because they break, so we need a steady stream of them to make sure they're accurate. We could probably, well, what we're having to do right now is to kind of accept that some will break.
What's the benefit then of moving to a shorter settlement period?
So the idea is that you can have, by exposing market participants to that granular price, so that, you know, this power station was only on for 5 minutes, but its price feeds through into the half hour period. Well, if I was consuming electricity 10 minutes after that, I still pay the price for the thing, even though I didn't consume electricity in that same period. Mm. So you could have a more granular system that allocated energy closer to when it was used. So you'd get more accurate behavioral signals. Consumers of electricity would target more finely when they use their electricity, producers of generators, mm-hmm. stuff that could ramp up quickly. Mm-hmm. For example, batteries would benefit a lot from having more granular mm-hmm. pricing signals, because ultimately it reflects down to a pricing signal.
Yep. And yeah, it puts more power into the market's hands, really, doesn't it, to be able to manage the risk of demand and generation mismatches.
Yeah.
And I guess, yeah, because you could have, with a 30-minute settlement period, you could have the strange situation where, a generator is long for the first 15 minutes and short for the second 15 minutes. And the two volumes kind of cancel each other out. So they're not out of balance at all. Mm. Whereas in a 15-minute settlement period world, you'd be able to capture those more accurately.
Precisely. So what other kinds of time are there?
Well, yeah, so that's the traded period is the settlement period. But then, yeah, there's a lot of different times. There's a lot of different
periods, kinds of time, blocks. There's lots of different words.
Important time periods, say, yeah. Around, yeah.
Because if there's, I mean, for example, you can't trade months ahead, half hour 36. It's getting a bit complicated. You can, Actually, I have heard of trades that are going on like that, but it's not, you're not going to have a very liquid market for just one or two settlement periods across time. So there's a lot of aggregation that goes into the wholesale markets from the settlement period. And that's where you get things like the EFA block. If you've never heard of an EFA block, it stands for Electricity Forward Agreement. And it's a 4-hour block across the day. But when I say day, the EFA block day does not start when you or I would consider a day to start. It starts at 11 a.m. the day before. 11 p.m. the day before. So at 11 p.m. the day before the EFA block day starts, then the day is sliced into 4 blocks.
No, 6 blocks.
Yeah, sorry, 4 hours. Six 4-hour blocks, exactly. Thank you. The EFA year starts in April.
Oh, I didn't even know there was an EFA year.
Well, yeah, they have to do to kind of fit it in with the Gregorian calendar. It has to start at some point. And then with there's the effect of leap years and stuff like that. But yes, the idea of this is to create a formalized structure around the day that makes it easier to price. So for example, if you hear someone referring to EFA 5 and 6, that's typically the overnight period. So if you're interested in things like dynamic containment or other dynamic services through National Grid, EFAs 5 and 6 are often the most expensive ones for dynamic containment because that's when the need for inertia is highest. And then I think 3 and 4 are kind of the midday evening peak, and 1 and 2 are the morning.
And where did they come from, these EFA blocks?
So I believe that they came from the old, they kind of fell out. So when the markets were designed, the engineers in National Grid already, or National Grid or CEGB as was, already had a system for cutting the day up into blocks. So 4-hour blocks that they would then optimize the system over. So when the engineers kind of moved out from being part of the nationalized system and went off to be traders in the newly privatized system, they brought that structure with them and created a system of kind of tradable blocks of power. And those are where the EFA blocks came from.
And then thereafter, it was adopted in European trading and sort of European regulations as well.
So it does depend. So not every market uses EFA blocks as well. So I definitely think it comes from GB as far as I've heard. But then because it doesn't match the Gregorian calendar, some other markets use actual times.
So how novel.
Lots of markets use the idea of breaking the day up into blocks, but the EFA block is not the standard. I mean, it's not a day, it's not a real day as anyone else would understand it. There's also other sorts of blocks and things. So you've heard of baseload and peak. So baseload is a kind of, well, a 24-hour period. It's if you're trading a block of power across the whole day. So I can provide you 100 megawatts on a baseload for winter 23. That's 100 megawatts on a flat profile throughout that whole period. But a peak is 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. So if you were to trade a peak load, it means that you only have to do it between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m.
And would there ever be more granular peak products, or that would just be EFA blocks, would it? So you just trade EFA block.
So for example, if I'm trying to hedge a position, I might trade out the base load so to my minimum demand, I'll trade out the base load. My peak shape, because your shape for consumption across the day is going to be a big nice curve. So the lowest part of that curve, you could buy up to your base load. In the middle of the day, you might buy a big block of peak to fill out the middle of the day, and then all the bits that kind of don't quite fit, you'll try and fill in with the EFA blocks. And as you get closer and closer to real time, you're getting more and more access to those granular products that are either hours or half hours, and then you can kind of fill in the rest of those shapes with that. And that's called shaping, and it's about trying to fit that, the shape of your demand that you think you're going to have, with all those different types of products, some of which are easier to get hold of than others. Hence the problem with shaping is that you might often find that you have to overbuy, say, base load, so that you have, because you just can't get hold of peak load or the EFA block or the hour ahead product, or you don't want to pay it. So you'll actually overbuy base load and cover your peak with the base, but that means that for a large part of the day you've overbought energy.
Or you might buy a generator, buy a peaking plant. I suppose we've seen big moves or big incentives in the British market towards vertical integration.
Yeah, and that and part of that shaping issue is driving that because of the difficulty of finding those products that accurately reflect the way people use electricity, but purely because it's difficult to predict what's going to happen with a long ahead of time so that people can buy those products with enough. And then do you either sit around waiting on your hands until the day ahead where you might get an opportunity to shape but you don't know what the price is, or do you overbuy, or do you just get the natural hedge and buy a power station?
So, and I guess the other kind of key time period close to real time is a concept called gate closure. So, well, although there's actually kind of two, well, it used to be kind of simple to describe, but now it's more complicated. So, there, I mean, there's two parts to it, right? There's the physical gate closure. And by physical, I mean, you know, physical generators and them submitting information and kind of locking in their positions and what they're going to do. And then there's the contractual gate closure, which is market participants ceasing to trade and notifying Elexon as the settlement body, the volumes that they've traded. And they're at different times, right? They used to be at the same time. So currently we have an hour ahead is physical gate closure. And that's when generators need to submit their final physical notifications, which is, you know, indicating to National Grid what they're going to do, and a lot of other supporting data.
This allows the system operator to have an hour ahead of real time, an idea of what's going to happen.
Yes. And that's really what kicks in the balancing mechanism as well. So the kind of that real time balancing tool. But then the second gate closure, I've forgotten what it's called now. What's it called?
Contract notification deadline.
Yes, contract notification deadline. The point at which you need to cease trading and notify Elexon what volumes you've traded and with whom. So that's the what's the contract notification.
And that's all about settlement, and settlement being the driver for trading accurately your position.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So historically, those two things were aligned. They were, well, originally they were three and a, well, with the market that we have now, they were 3.5 hours ahead of the settlement period.
So back in 2001.
Back in 2001. And then in 2005, we moved to a 1 hour ahead gate closure. And that was for both the physical and the contractual.
Why did we move from 3.5 hours to 1 hour?
Well, as I understand it, the 3.5 hours was, I think it was only meant to be transitional. So, you know, we used to have a pool market where National Grid had a much bigger role and was able to optimize the market from day ahead. And I think there was a bit of nervousness when we were proposing this new market to reduce National Grid's role to this residual balancer. So I think the idea was, okay, well, we'll start off at 3.5 hours, but we'll review that. Ideally, we'll reduce that to as little as possible.
And the reason it was 3.5 hours is that was how long it took to warm up a coal-fired power station at the time.
Yeah.
So they're nervous about, if we're not in control of the whole market, we want to be able to warm up a coal-fired power station just in case.
That was 2005. And then what year did we move the contractual?
Oh, it's like 2018, something like that, I think.
Yeah, it was relatively recently. And we kind of said, hey, you know, we've got these problems with liquidity. So, you know, volumes available intraday and trading. And as you mentioned, people might not necessarily be able to find the shape that they want. You know, if we extend the time in which people can do that, then that'll be good for the market. And as long as generators are telling grid what they're doing, and that's not causing any swings in what assets are doing, it should be fine to allow financial trading or physical trading to happen after that point.
And the original proposal, as I seem to recall it, was to actually allow trading to happen all the way till an hour after the settlement period, or the end of the settlement period. So even after, you know, the system operator had started dispatching stuff in the BM, party would still be able to basically financially trade. There is a physical position because you would be open to imbalance, but in effect, because no major generators would be able to actually change their pattern after gate closure, it would in effect be a financial trade. So I think the other thing that's probably, yeah, the thing about this is it's who's in charge and what's the role of the residual balancer. That's the main debate here. The other thing that's really important is how long it takes for them to do all the stuff and how many other markets you've got layered in. Because for example, it takes about 15 minutes to notify a once the exchanges have kind of closed, for them to run everything, tell everyone, and then pass all the information along. So actually, in reality, markets close 15 minutes before the deadline, because they need all this time to run this stuff. So you've got to bear in mind that, you know, there's algorithms running, there's communication stuff that needs to go into place. It can't, there may be a deadline, but actually in reality, because it takes time to get all of the things in place, the deadline is before that, the real deadline. When they were talking about TER, there was TER, the Trans-European Replacement Reserves Exchange, which is about, I still remember it, which is about sharing replacement reserve products across borders. Because it had this algorithm that had to run alongside national grid stuff, they had to plan very carefully how the markets, how the TER algorithm and how the grid algorithms would all work together. And they all had to be in the right order as well. So that actually meant that they were butting up against the time that between gate closure and real time, that, you know, if the algorithm was maybe 10, you know, took 10 minutes too long to solve, then actually there wouldn't be enough time for all this information to pass around every market participant. So there was a real incentive to get, you know, the most accurate, lean, optimal algorithm to work in this situation. And actually they thought that for GB, it might have been impossible to get some of the other reserve products like MFRR and MARI to actually work in GB, because the gate closure time and the amount of time it took for everything to be passed along, just there just wouldn't be enough time after gate closure.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. And so the other thing around gate closure is it doesn't apply to all participants. So yes, really only if you are either, well, licensed or above a certain size, or if you've opted in to the balancing mechanism, then you have to follow the rules and submit the information and tell National Grid what you're going to do, and then do it. And you don't deviate from that position. However, smaller assets are able to effectively self-dispatch in real time. So they don't have the same grid code obligations to tell National Grid what they're going to do, so they can respond after gate closure and through the settlement period as well. So that's kind of a, yeah, unlevel playing field, I suppose, that it currently exists.
Information advantage.
Yes.
Because of the timing issue and the requirement to fix everything by gate closure for a large generator, means that that large generator is then, well, in the control of National Grid, whereas a small generator who might be license exempt and therefore doesn't have to participate can wait to see what's happening, get more information, have a better chance of forecasting imbalance, or what is called NIV chasing.
And I mean, that's only the case in Great Britain, right? So I know of other markets, for the Netherlands, for example, where they allow self-dispatch. I think they sterilize certain assets at the day-ahead stage for constraint reasons, or at least before real-time for constraint reasons. But once they've done that, and once they've secured certain things, the, you know, generators have a bit more freedom and flexibility in real-time to respond.
And then, I mean, we're kind of in the realm of balancing, because we're in that. The other interesting interaction here is with all the balancing services, because these are, again, they're sterilized beforehand, aren't they? Because the auctions, most of them are now on auctions of some kind or another, are happening at the day ahead stage. So there's an interaction then between, again, ether blocks, because a lot of them are now on ether blocks. So you've got to decide, for example, which ether blocks will, I think, will be the best ones to say I'm in a balancing service, because often if you're in a balancing service, you can't trade in the wholesale market, you can't be in the BM, because they're kind of exclusive. So you're not only thinking about the times in which you're providing different things, which could be based on different types of products, and when you might want to trade based on weather, demand, all sorts of things, but you've also got to think about when the auction for different things are happening, because if the day ahead auction for wholesale power prices is happening before the auction for store, then I have to make my decision about the wholesale market before I make my decision about store. Which one do I want to be in? Because you want to have the best possible opportunity. If you don't have the full information, because these aren't all happening at the same time, so you've got to make a decision about what your cutoff points are in each of these markets. I can't remember which one comes first, but you know, at the day ahead stage, you've got DCs happening, dynamic containment, you've got store is happening, you've got the day ahead market, and don't know, you won't know, you won't have perfect information about all of them because they don't all happen at the same time. And there isn't a co-optimized market that cleans it all together. Same thing for interconnectors, which there did used to be a market that cleaned them all to cleared them all together. But we don't have that anymore. So now you've also basically disconnected GB from the price coupling. So even before the day ahead stage, you've got to be making a decision about whether, you know, whether you're trading on the interconnectors and whether or not you're buying transmission, physical transmission rights across the cables. So there's lots of really interesting timing interactions between having information at certain points and when things are happening that can all lead up to all the way to real time.
Yeah, and as you say, it's kind of both the algorithms, the optimization, it's the time that companies can take to just turn things around and get the information out, and then also decision making within companies, right? So they need to then have a short window, you know, the traders, to say, okay, well, let's put this volume and this price into this market now that we know what's happened here. So it's,
and that's where algorithms are going to be important as well in the future energy market, because this is a lot of data to hold, you know, in your head or in a process. And actually, it's likely, and that we already see that, you know, algorithms are in charge of a lot of this optimization problem for companies.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, that a lot of these auctions are now happening at the day ahead stage. And historically, we would have procured a lot of these balancing services much further in advance. So it could have been week ahead, month ahead, months ahead, even years ahead in some circumstances. I said, why have we moved from longer term procurement to shorter term procurement for these things?
Well, so the stated reason on the box is to save consumers money, because if you the theory being is that if you have better optimized markets closer to real-time procurement, there'll be more competition. The costs will be more reflective of what's actually going on in the system because parties have better information. So there should be greater consumer savings available. There could also be higher prices of scarcity, which is good for people who are willing to take that risk. And the, I guess the lesson from ancillary services market development is the more participants you bring into the auction, and the closer you get them to reflect their costs, the lower the prices will be. Is what, you know, we've seen that since 2010-11 when Store was, you know, really started to bring in aggregators, and the prices fell there, and then that cascaded through into FFR, and then that cascaded through into battery services, and it's starting to cascade through into the balancing mechanism and dynamic containment and all that sort of stuff. Is that, you know, the, I guess the general trend and the lesson is more competition, more participants, closer to real-time procurement tend to get lower costs overall for consumers. The downside is you don't get, you start to kind of whittle away the investment case, and there isn't certainty. So it used to be that, you know, if you were a battery, you tried to get a long-term agreement through EFR contracts, long-term store is a good example, and you could build something off the back of it. But these, you know, the new ancillary services markets, they are definitely there for people who are willing to take a risk. They're not there for, you know, to kind of support an investment in a new piece of kit.
Yeah. And I guess from the market or the system operator's perspective, curing close to real time, they have a better visibility of what their needs are. Mm. It's kind of like what you were saying earlier, you know, if they were procuring, had to procure everything years ahead, they almost have to do that on a base load basis, and they could be over procuring at some times and holding too much. And I guess, yeah, the point around increased competition, you know, there's certain providers that just can't. I think demand side response is the perfect example. You know, they can't know that they'll be able to provide a certain service years ahead or months ahead. They really need to kind of, yeah, know what's going on closer to real time, and then they've got a better idea of their availability.
And that's where things like the capacity market, which we always seem to come back to, that's procured 4 years in advance. So there's a 4 year lag. It's procured across one delivery year that starts in October and ends in April. No, September. I've got electricity seasons on the brain, which start in April. You know, winter, summer starts in April and winter starts in October. And yes, that's 4 years ahead. I think grid, or, you know, people procuring ancillary services, because it might not always be National Grid in the future, would say that, well, you know, the capacity market does a lot of that long-term stuff for us, so we don't need to do that.
Trading is another way to get long-term certainty. So, I mean, you can have contracts for 5, 10, 15 years.
Yeah, power purchase agreements typically will be used to cover at least the length of the subsidy.
Or again, you know, we mentioned vertical integration, just buying an asset. You know, that's a great way to have certainty over volumes provided. You know, you've bought it. It's yours.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good tour through the concept of time in electricity markets. I guess, so the idea is, in summation, you've got a range of different things that we're trying to do with the system, and time is used to cut those up into blocks to make things simpler. So, you know, even though electricity is a second-by-second engineering problem, we cut it into half-an-hour blocks to get the market to optimize it. The system operator needs to know things an hour before time and optimizes things over a four-hour window. So that kind of lends itself to this blocking process. Trading is aggregated up to these shapes, baseload, peak, ether blocks. And things are committed in different times ahead. Our gate closure being an hour ahead, day ahead for most of the liquid markets and the ancillary services, 4 years ahead for capacity market, many, many years for power purchase agreements and you know, investment decisions. So time is a really important function of how you think about the electricity market, not only for the interactions, but also when you've got to do stuff and how you're doing stuff and making those decisions. Does that sound like a suitably grown-up conclusion?
Yeah, I'm just googling time puns. I was really hoping to come in and say something like, "That sure was a good time, Tom." Oof. Nope.
I haven't got time for this.
Okay, good. Well, I'll catch you next time, huh?
Well, thanks for listening. This has been the Substation Podcast. I've been Tom.
And I've been Emma.
You can follow us on at Substation Podcast on Twitter. You can email the Substation Podcast at googlemail.com. You can follow me at Notional Grid. You can follow Emma at Energy Burns. And now that we're allowed to see each other in the flesh again, you'll probably see us at an industry event at some point. Woo! Bye! You're desperately searching for one last pun, aren't you?
6:30 is the best time on a clock. Hands down.
These are all terrible, you're right.